this time on Compassion Radio.
The commonality we have is a relationship with Christ. Truthfully, you may not have a lot of connections beyond that. We cannot communicate other than with a few of the children and a few of the adults. We just don't have a lot of common ground in a lot of ways, but we worship the same God.
This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. On this program, Bram takes you with him to the farthest corners of a globe, where he spends time with the people who've been called to share the love of Jesus Christ in the mission field. Recently, Bram received an email via CompassionRadio.com from a man named Josh Manning here in the U.S. He was writing Bram to tell him about the incredibly unique pastoral ministry that God had given him in his hometown in Missouri, and to simply thank Bram for the broadcast. Well, Bram was so moved by the email that he reached out to Josh to talk. What came from their phone call was nothing short of a treasure trove of stories about the power of God to minister to a diverse group of immigrants who've come here from all over the world. I'm Frank Montenegro, inviting you to stay with us for part one of their conversation.
Friends, today on Compassion Radio, you understand that we're all about finding hometown heroes, whether they're international in some foreign country, at the end of the Andes Trail, or in the middle of a desert in Africa, or at the end of a dirt road in Missouri. So today we're going to take you to another pioneer of the faith, Joshua Manning. Welcome to Compassion Radio.
Hello, nice to talk to you today.
We're going to ask you a few questions about the ministry you're currently involved in, because your email to me through the prayer line at CompassionRadio.com really moved me. Your story is obviously going to be a very fascinating one to our listeners. So I want to ask you, first of all, where were you and how did you end up stumbling into the ministry?
I have zero training. I was working as a Walmart manager, working 70 hours a week, 60 hours a week, whatever it is, and not spending enough time home with the family. And I knew I wanted to do some kind of ministry. I didn't know what.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest problem is we were going to have to live on less income. We knew that. And I was already struggling with my personal debt. So we got out of debt. We were debt-free for the first time in our life, other than a car. So then I stepped out of my position and, you know, make a lot less money. And I told my pastor I just wanted to be of assistance there in the church. And so I started just teaching a few Sunday school classes, just filling in. We did meals at church, little silly stuff like that. One thing led to another, and I have no seminary training, anything. But a year later, here I am pastoring a church. Our church course has an English class going that's sponsored through Crowder College. And we have 60 to 70 students currently attending there. We're pursuing all that kind of stuff. It's having a wonderful time at it, but absolutely, completely untrained, all that stuff, novice in it all.
Joshua, people that have training or degrees or credentials are not necessarily the people that God calls. And obviously, you've been called. And in that way, the Holy Spirit himself is the one that anoints us for ministry. Tell me more about how the pastor decided that you were the guy to reach out to this particular group of people in your community. And what's special about the group that you're pastoring now?
My qualifications are simply my willingness, and I don't have anything beyond that. There was a need for a pastor at this church because the previous one had left. There was just a family and a few of the refugee population there. We had a need to have someone there, and I was willing. Truthfully, it didn't get any more complicated than that.
So this little corner of Missouri that you're living in, what's happened in the past 10 years? Why is there suddenly a refugee community that needed attention?
There's a very large poultry processing plant. It has 1,400 workers, and the town's population is 1,800. And so it gives you an idea that this is basically the primary and virtually only place of people to work in this area.
When places start as a company town, they tend to be full of exploitation, but something different is happening here. And I think a lot of it has to do with the presence of Christ ministering to and winning souls to him and building up the baseline of dignity within the community. And you choosing to go into ministry to help these people who are recently into your community, recently into the culture, recently into the country, is remarkable. So tell me a little bit about the people, these immigrants that you serve.
There is a wide variety of places they've come from. Our largest group is going to be the Somali population.
Somalis, good.
There's probably 500 to 600 of those. As you go down in size, you'll have Hispanic communities from all different countries. You'll have the people I primarily work with, the Karen people from Southeast Asia.
Karen we've been involved with many times.
Oh, yeah. From Southeast Asia, there's quite a few groups. There's Pacific Islands. All told, there's 11 languages spoken in the school. I've heard many more cultures present here in the town, but I can't verify those numbers. 11 languages in the school is something I can verify.
And that's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah, if you're talking a town of 1,800 people.
Yeah. And I was on a missions trip back in like 87, 88, where we led some missions through Western and Eastern Europe. And it was a remarkable thing then to have 10 or 11 languages cooperating together in one missions project. But these were also developed countries where they already had relationships. You're talking about developing a whole new culture within a multicultural context. And we talk a lot on this program about the importance of kingdom culture. So what is it about being a pastor and representing Jesus to these people that creates a commonality? I want to hear about how people are really connecting.
The commonality we have is a relationship with Christ.
Hmm.
Truthfully, you may not have a lot of connections beyond that. My Korean people, we cannot communicate other than with a few of the children and a few of the adults. We just don't have a lot of common ground in a lot of ways, but we worship the same God.
Hmm. Amen
and
to
so
that.
On Sunday mornings, I stand up front and I have a translator standing beside me, and we have that relationship together. Sunday afternoon, we're invited to their New Year's celebration, and we're going to go participate with them there. And I am fascinated. I've been looking it up on YouTube, and honestly, I know very little about this other than that, but they're going to give me an opportunity to preach.
Amazing.
So I'm going to do so.
And this is a community that wouldn't necessarily all be in your church either. These are people from the Korean community that are coming because of their relationships with other Korean. And because of your relationship with some Korean, you get to reach all the Korean in one day.
Exactly. I probably have about half of the population in town attending my church. The other half are going to be primarily either Buddhist or a cult of Christianity that I don't believe is correct.
Hmm.
You have some tremendous witnessing opportunities there. Any kind of community group and community type party like that, we are always invited, and they usually expect me to preach or teach. And so I take full advantage in that opportunity. The other groups that we are trying to get into, just because of our proximity of where our church and our English class is going to be, of course, the Somali groups. Those are slower to evangelize, although we have had some success. They are naturally more suspicious of myself being a pastor, but we are building some relationships, and that has been a good thing.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. And there's a lot more coming up, so please stay with us. If you've missed anything today, you can listen again anytime just by opening up a browser on your computer, your smartphone, or tablet, and going to CompassionRadio.com. And while you're there, check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And please think about signing up for our email updates. Again, it's CompassionRadio.com.
We're always on mission. This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria.
That's Selah with a song called Lord, I Trust You from their CD called Unbreakable. And we'll send you a copy of it as our way of saying thanks for supporting this ministry financially. Just go to CompassionRadio.com to give today and to get your copy of this great CD from Selah. Again, that's CompassionRadio.com.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria.
So tell me a little bit about the people, these immigrants that you serve.
There is a wide variety of places they've come from. Our largest group is going to be the Somali population.
Somalis, good.
There's probably 500 to 600 of those. As you go down in size, you'll have Hispanic communities from all different countries. You'll have the people I primarily work with, the Karen people from Southeast Asia.
Karen, we've been involved with many times.
Oh, yeah. From Southeast Asia, there's quite a few groups. There's Pacific Islands. All told, there's 11 languages spoken in the school. I've heard many more cultures present here in the town, but I can't verify those numbers. The 11 languages in the school is something I can verify.
And that's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah, if you're talking a town of 1,800 people.
Yeah. And I was on a missions trip back in like 87, 88, where we led some missions through Western and Eastern Europe. And it was a remarkable thing then to have 10 or 11 languages cooperating together in one missions project. But these were also developed countries where they already had relationships. You're talking about developing a whole new culture within a multicultural context. And we talk a lot on this program about the importance of kingdom culture. So what is it about being a pastor and representing Jesus to these people that creates a commonality? I want to hear about how people are really connecting.
The commonality we have is a relationship with Christ.
Hmm.
Truthfully, you may not have a lot of connections beyond that. My Korean people, we cannot communicate other than with a few of the children and a few of the adults. We just don't have a lot of common ground in a lot of ways, but we worship the same God.
Hmm. Amen
and
to
so
that.
On Sunday mornings, I stand up front and I have a translator standing beside me, and we have that relationship together. Sunday afternoon, we're invited to their New Year's celebration, and we're going to go participate with them there. And I am fascinated. I've been looking it up on YouTube, and honestly, I know very little about this other than that, but they're going to give me an opportunity to preach.
Amazing.
So I'm going to do so.
And this is a community that wouldn't necessarily all be in your church either. These are people from the Karen community that are coming because of their relationships with other Karen, and because of your relationship with some Karen, you get to reach all the Karen in one day.
Exactly. I probably have about half of the population in town attending my church. The other half are going to be primarily either Buddhist or a cult of Christianity that I don't believe is correct.
Hmm.
You have some tremendous witnessing opportunities there. Any kind of community group and community type party like that, we are always invited, and they usually expect me to preach or teach. And so I take full advantage in that opportunity. The other groups that we are trying to get into just because of our proximity of where our church and our English class is going to be, of course, the Somali groups. Those are slower to evangelize, although we have had some success. They are naturally more suspicious of myself being a pastor, but we are building some relationships, and that has been a good thing. The Hispanic communities we have, there is a Baptist church in town that is primarily Hispanic. So we did have a Hispanic translator this last Sunday's translating into Spanish, but that's not normally what we do.
This exercise in cross-cultural ministry happening within the walls of this church, you know, it harkens back to something that was in the media this past year, and it did pretty well at the box office, that film All Saints, where you have a similar situation down in Tennessee. These Karens suddenly move in, and they've got to cope with the changes that are coming to the community and the struggles that any culture who's native to the area has.
It's interesting you bring that movie up.
Tell me more.
That movie came out right when I was getting involved here. You got to realize I had never heard of the Karen people until a week before I was preaching to them. I felt extremely overwhelmed not knowing what I was doing. I'd only given, at that point, a dozen sermons in my life, okay? Mm. This is the newness I was at. And that movie came out, and one of the English class instructors took me and my family to watch that movie. I got so excited, I tracked down the current pastor of that church and have been in contact with him, and he sent me some neat resources and so on.
Perfect.
So that movie very closely reflects what we look like at our church.
And it was something that God literally dropped into history right ahead of you to prepare you for the work you're doing. So kudos to those movie producers for chasing a story that has such eternal consequence. I recommend the film. I saw it last year. I had a great time watching it. I was very inspired myself. And now I'm hearing that it literally is the bedrock for a ministry that's thriving there in Southwest Missouri. Joshua, tell me more about what kind of ministry you have to do. How is it unique? Of course, this is your first pastorate, so it may not feel unique to you. But how do you go about your ministry day to day? What do you spend your time doing?
Well, I'm bivocational. This is a very low-income church just because our primary work is for refugees. And so I do work at Walmart several days a week still. However, my ministry time is going to be spent, you know, of course, preparing for sermons, a lot of stuff that they invite us to in our Korean community. We do the birthday parties. Those are huge for their culture.
Why are birthday parties so big?
From what I have been told, it seems to be in that area of the world, all the cultures really enjoy that.
Interesting.
What it looks like for us is they invite me into their home. Typically, there is little to no furniture except for one chair where I'm to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sit with my Bible, the entire community, so it could be 40 people or more in the little duplex, sit in a circle around me, and they expect me to preach. And typically, this is on Sunday afternoon after I've just given the regular service. And so most of the time, I'm unprepared because I don't know if I've been warned in advance once. And
okay.
So what I do is I whip open the Bible, and I'll usually pick something, Romans or Ephesians or something I feel pretty confident with. I'll preach there for a little bit. It'll be interpreted into Korean, then prayer, and usually that's an extensive period of time itself. And after that, it's the traditional birthday stuff. I mean, you bring out a cake, you sing to the kids, and you do those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But it ends up virtually a small church service that we have at every birthday. And
how
we
fun.
Do typically our church members, but we also do the rest in the Korean community.
So what kind of impact are these birthday party sermons having? I mean, are you seeing new people coming to faith because of it, or are people asking new questions they wouldn't have asked before? What's happening there?
The benefit and the good things with all the things that they are asking me to be in is it's not my church members that's there often.
Hmm.
Because we'll have, you know, it may be 50% my church members, but the other 50% are going to be non-Christians.
So every time you're out at a birthday party, you're on mission.
Absolutely. That's the reason we're going. That's like the New Year's party on Sunday. It's going to be the same thing. I will see some of my church members there, but it's also going to be people from the rest of the community. And it's a pretty exciting way to just be able to preach the gospel very boldly to these folks.
How fun. And of course, it's a little awkward from an American perspective to be sitting in that chair of honor as if you're on some kind of throne and people crowding around you. But within Korean culture, that is just absolutely the way you organize things.
Truthfully, it was awkward. And I didn't know how to handle that appropriately because they have a very high reverence for people in the leadership, almost to the point of embarrassment from my standpoint. I've been told they wish to honor me, so I allow them to in that regards. But when it's appropriate, I do try to deflect some of that as much as I can. But I do try to use that general respect, even among the non-Christian community, to my advantage because that's what's allowing me the opportunity to preach to them because I'm viewed as a religious leader.
And introducing in a new ethic, a new kingdom ethic, learning to be a servant leader. And that grows over time. It has different manifestations in different cultures. So in their culture, for example, sitting on the chair would not be considered pompous or self-serving. It would be simply what's required of honor. If they honor the book, they're going to honor you. So you want to respect what they honor. Other times, you may be leading them into a new way of understanding what it means to be a servant and offering to serve them when they've never been offered service before. That starts turning the tide in our hearts when we realize that as we serve each other, we bring honor to Christ. And I'm sure you have plenty of exercises along the way here, Josh.
I agree.
So tell me about that.
From my Midwestern sentimentalities, I do feel very awkward in that situation. But we just try to cohabitate together and just because we do worship the same God and we have the same general things that we're trying to accomplish.
Josh, if you don't mind digging a little deeper into what it's like to be in this kind of position. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are very curious. How in the world does a guy who works at Walmart, who's been called by his pastor to step out and take a risk, handle the stresses of being a missionary, being an apostle, being a pastor and a bishop, all these things kind of wrap up into one when you're doing cross-cultural communications like this. And you've said it was your availability that made the difference and that you put that on the altar for the Lord to take and use as he chose. And he chose you and chose that place and chose these people. What an honor that is.
Now, if you've missed any part of today's broadcast, you can listen again just by going to CompassionRadio.com on your computer, smartphone, or tablet. Again, that's CompassionRadio.com. And while you're there, check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And please think about signing up for our email updates. And if you have a minute, go ahead and take our partner survey. This is a great way for us to learn how to better serve you. Again, it's CompassionRadio.com. Now, if this broadcast is a blessing to you, we'd like to ask you to consider three things. First, the obvious. Please pray for us. Your prayers are vital to the effectiveness of this ministry. Second, would you please tell a friend about Compassion Radio? You know, sharing this broadcast will help us reach as many people as possible with the exciting reports Bram brings us from the mission field, both here in the U.S. and all over the world. And finally, would you please consider supporting this ministry financially? We are 100% listener supported, so your gifts make it possible for us to continue. Now today when you give, we'll send you a copy of the latest CD from gospel vocal trio Sela called Unbreakable as our way of saying thanks. To support Compassion Radio today, you can call 800-868-2478, or you can go to CompassionRadio.com on your computer, tablet, or smartphone. While you're there, just click on the top right mini menu icon and then click Donate. Again, it's 800-868-2478 or CompassionRadio.com. Here's Bram with a closing word.
Hi, friends. This is Bram Floria with Compassion Radio, the radio voice for global mission. For almost 75 years now, you've generously enabled the ministry, projects, and vision of our founders, Wilbur and Norm Nelson. Today, we continue to need your support and prayers. In fact, we accomplish nothing without it. If you've ever been encouraged by this broadcast, if you've been challenged in your faith walk, if we've helped you to see the kingdom in a fresh, new way, if we've ever encouraged you to act in obedience, then we've accomplished our goal. Please help us continue to offer this timely and inspiring program here each day. Your gift is needed now more than ever. Contact us by phone, mail, or online. 1-800-868-2478 or P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California 92859. And of course, CompassionRadio.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to listen. Now, before we go, I want you to turn to the friend or loved one you're with, that is, unless you're driving, and tell them that you love them and appreciate them. And if you're listening alone today, please know that we love you and we appreciate you. I'm Frank Montenegro. Please be sure to join us again for more Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. This program is sponsored by Compassion Radio Ministries and your generous financial support.